T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, show to camera, John Rich. It is 94 WIP, and every Wednesday at this time, we get the great pleasure of talking to a great person who is, of course, also incredibly insightful and interesting, and our guest every Wednesday at 12:45. He joins us on the Swartz Carlton guest line. If you're injured at work, get justice. Call Swartz Carlton at 800-JUSTICE. One of those rare days where we have four local teams to talk to Ray Dittinger about. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
Ray, this is an intersection of teams, you know, almost unlike any other, I guess, in our history of being a sports fan in Philadelphia, or covering Philadelphia sports. This is something.
Yes, it is. talking about hockey in August, yeah, that's a little different.
It really is.
Yeah, and it's, Ed, you're right, everybody's in action, yeah. and there is a lot to talk about, so have at it.
Right, let's start with the Phils. We'll get to the Eagles, which, of course, people most closely associate you with, and we'll do a lot on them. But let's start with the Phillies. They play a doubleheader starting in about 3 hours here on WIP. It's an important day. They're 1-3. They could get to 500 or be 1-5 when this is over, or 2-4. Girardi. John expressed in the beginning of the show today some disappointment with Girardi out of the gate, and basically made the assertion that he thinks some people overrated Girardi. And I told him, well, yeah, I think they did, because some people thought he was going to walk on water and snap his fingers and the Phils were going to turn around just based on him. They clearly haven't, and I don't think will. What is your opinion out of the gate of what we've seen from Girardi, and just on a broad sense, the impact that a manager in baseball can actually have?
Well, I really like him. I thought it was a good hire. I still feel it was a good hire. I mean, he's infinitely better than what you had. So I mean, you start with that. He's a legitimate big league manager, which the previous guy was not. But he still comes down to the players he's putting on the field. And, when he goes to the bullpen, he's got to deal the deck of cards that he was handed by Matt Klentak, which frankly isn't very good. And we've known that for a long time. Some of the other issues with the team, I think there have been, and this is coming from a guy who's a Girardi fan, but I mean, in fairness, I mean, he's made a couple pitching decisions that you would question in terms of relief, you know, who he's going to and what situation in relief. But I don't know that he has that many great options out there.
Yep.
So I'm willing to cut him a little slack on that. You know, you reach into that bullpen, it almost is an eeny, meeny, miny, mo kind of thing, you know, and they're all kind of the same, and none of it's good. So he's kind of stuck with that, and that's not really his fault. The other part of it, the offense, I still believe that's going to come around. I mean, we've talked a lot about the lineup that they have and the offensive promise that they represent, and I still think you're going to see that. But I mean, they are leaving a ton of guys on base right now. And I don't think that's going to continue all season. I think once they get some games under their belt, it's been such a weird year. I mean, spring training, then not spring training, then the long layoff, then you come back. You play 3 games, you sit for a week, you come back, you're facing the best pitcher in baseball. It hasn't been a situation that's conducive to getting good offense generated.
It is. But it is possible, though, Ray, this offense won't be as good as we thought or hoped. Kingery really hasn't proven it yet in big league baseball.
Right.
Harper, while very good, I have long contended, is not a top five player, as many think he is. Hoskins, as a hitter, when he is trying to hit the ball, not walk, trying to hit the ball, looks off and has looked off now going back, obviously, to midway through last year. And McCutchen, you know, he's got to prove it post-big injury and at an advanced age, and I hope he does, and we'll see if he does, but through 4 games, he hasn't. So there is a chance this lineup's just not going to be as good as we hoped it would be.
Could be. You know, I mean, that could be. I don't really expect that. Of all the things that you just discussed, the one that concerns me the most is Hoskins, because he's looked so bad for so long. Right now he's really in a funk. And you kind of were hoping a new hitting coach could work him out of it.
Right.
There's a lot of talk in spring training that he had adjusted his stance, that he was dropping his hands a little bit, that he was and I actually did think he kind of looked a little more comfortable at the plate, but it's certainly not showing any results. And now you look at him and you just you just get the sense, just watching him, that he's going up to the plate with no confidence. I mean, he's just up there. He's just up there feeling for it, you know. And that's tough. You know, in the big leagues, when you get into that funk, and we've seen guys do that before. Some guys hit their way out of it, and some guys don't. Kingery is a young player who I think, given enough at bats and enough opportunities, will figure it out. I'm a little more concerned about Hoskins. I'm beginning to become concerned that this might be a long term problem.
Ray, Matt Klentak has made a really good manager look, you know, not so good at times with the players he's provided him.
Sure.
Is this season a wash regardless in terms of evaluating Matt Klentak's ability to be the GM here because it's so short? Or is this evaluation of Matt Klentak, like when you evaluate Matt Klentak, do you have in the back of your mind John Middleton's telling him not to spend and so he only has so much he can do anyway? Or do you look at it like the guy's not good enough, this is unacceptable? Because I struggle with that. Like, I'm mad at Matt Klentak most of the time, and then every once in a while it'll pop into my head, well, he's told he can't spend into the luxury tax, so what's he supposed to do?
I'm kind of right there with you. I suspect, as you are, I'm kind of going back and forth on it. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes that I'm feeling it's more his fault, and then there are other times when I take a step back and say, well, wait a minute. We don't know exactly what he's dealing with at his desk. I mean, how much freedom and how much ability to spend and maneuver is the owner giving him?
Yeah.
That none of us know. But I do think you can blame him for the bullpen. I mean, it was no secret. I mean, you just looked at what you had there, and you looked at the makeup of the kind of season you were going to be faced with. When you knew starting pitching was going to be at a premium, you knew your starting pitching wasn't going to be able to go far into games, you knew that your bullpen was going to be absolutely critical in this season, and you rolled it out. You rolled out the worst bullpen in baseball. And you had plenty of time to see this coming, and they didn't do nearly enough to fortify themselves. And, you know, I don't think John Middleton had anything to do with that, or if he did, it was, you know, 5% of it. I think most of it you got to lay at the feet of Matt Klentak.
Ray Dittinger with us here. All right, Ray, let's flip it to the Birds. Doug Peterson, the positive test for Corona. What is your reaction? What does it say to you about the viability of an Eagles season, of an NFL season? Does it change anything?
I think it tells you how tenuous the whole thing is. Because we saw Doug's press conference the week before, where he expressed complete confidence in the situation they had at NovaCare, the protocols being in place, everyone's commitment to following the rules and doing things the right way. And I have no reason to doubt any of that. I think he believed all of that, and I think it was probably all true. But somewhere along the line, he just came in contact with somebody, and he picked it up. Now, thank goodness he's asymptomatic. Thank goodness he's okay. But that doesn't mean that he couldn't have infected somebody else or multiple guys, you know, who will maybe be more prone to this. And so that's really scary. I mean, you look around the league, you've seen the number of guys that have opted out. I don't blame any of them for doing that.
Agreed.
Every team has been touched by it. And this virus is, it's vicious, man. I mean, it is so contagious. That all it has to do is get to one guy in one locker room, and when you get down to putting pads on and actually playing football, I don't know how you're going to rein it in. I know the directive is going to come down from all the TV networks to the league to say you got to play a season. We can't afford not to have an NFL season. I mean, we literally cannot afford to not have an NFL season. So everything's possible is going to be done to get teams on the field and play games on Sundays to feed the TV industry and to keep the revenue going. But I think you're going to have to do all kinds of crazy things to do it. I think you're probably going to have to quarantine some people. I've heard a lot of conversation in some teams. Bruce Arians is the first one that I heard suggest it, but I'm sure he's not going to be the last. It's to quarantine one of your quarterbacks.
Totally. Yep.
you know, just take him and just, you know, just put him off to the side. You know, okay, we'll have two quarterbacks on Sunday, but we're going to have another guy who's going to be, our Zoom quarterback. And he's not going to be anywhere near us, that if something happens, that we'll have somebody that we can pull in that knows the playbook, that can come in and take a snap and run a play. I think Arians is the first one that said it, but as soon as he said it, I thought that makes perfect sense. I mean, you might see every team do that. If I were running a team, I would. So, yeah, this is a world unlike any other. And I know the league's commitment to this, but we still don't know. I mean, I just don't look at it almost as a week-to-week proposition. To me, it almost looks like a day-to-day proposition.
Well, here's the thing, and again, Ray Dittinger with it. Ray, this is the thing to me that I think I've got as the thing that is the heart of the matter for the football season. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is just the way I see it. I think it comes down to a question of whether the owners and the players have the stomach for walking into a situation over 5-6 months with those rosters that big and that type of combat where you're going to be breathing up on each other and touching each other and all that, do they have the stomach to just plow ahead if 10, 20, 30 guys on a team gets wiped out for a period of time? And I don't know the answer to that. I tend to think the answer is no, that they don't have the stomach for that, that maybe the owners want to, but the players would be less inclined to. I mean, what would be your answer, Ray? Because we saw it with the Marlins right out of the gate.
Right.
And it's a different sport with less players. I mean, do you really think the owners and do you really think the players have the stomach to say, we will just plow forward even if 30 guys get knocked out of the team for 2 weeks?
Really hard to do, Joe. I mean, I think you and I are sort of the same mind on this. I do think that's the reality of it. I do think that's what lies down the road. Are those kinds of decisions and those kinds of crises? They won't be with every team. I mean, but they'll certainly be with some. And how do you deal with that? And it's going to, you know, a lot of this is going to come down to the Players Association. You know, how much the leadership of the Players Association, how much those guys are willing to push forward with this. You know, John can probably speak to this a little bit as a guy who's been there, who's been through these kinds of things before. But we've seen the NFL in a different set of circumstances, but in 1987, when you had virtually all 95% of the veteran players walk out, that the owners just said, hey, listen, you know, we're not stopping. You know, we're just going to take guys off the street, and we're just going to keep playing games, and they did. You know, they weren't going to shut down the season. They just kept the season going with a bunch of guys who wore NFL jerseys but weren't NFL players.
Yep.
And you know, they added up the points, and they added up the yards, and they added up the completions, and they played it just like it was real pro football, even though it wasn't. And that went on for a whole month. And then finally the union broke and they came back and they finished the season and they had a Super Bowl and they crowned the Redskins champions and the world went on. But we've seen in the past that, I mean, it was illogical, it was phony. I thought it was embarrassing, frankly, for the NFL. But they weren't prepared to walk away from business as usual, and so they made that go. This is a little bit different, but it's the same principle. It's the idea that, okay, you're going to have a situation where maybe some teams are going to lose 25 guys. And they'll just try and say, oh, there's some years that you have a lot of injuries. Just look at it that. And we'll just do next man up, next man up, next man up, times 25, and they're going to keep playing. But the pressure to keep playing is going to be tremendous coming down from above. And I'm not talking about Park Avenue NFL from above. I'm talking about the TV networks from above.
Yeah. Hey, Ray, more specifics. Let's talk about players individually. Jalen Reagor. You watched him, you scrutinized him as a college player.
Yep.
I can't get around the fact that these rookies are doing next to nothing compared to what they would have done ordinarily in training camp. Jalen Reagor's game, when you think in your mind what he did at TCU and you superimpose that over what he's going to be asked to do here, are Eagles fans expecting something unreasonable from this guy this season because of the lack of preparation that he will have when games actually start?
Yeah, well, it depends on what they're expecting or what they're being told by the team to expect. I think it's going to be very tough for him, to be honest with you. I went back and I pulled out my scouting reports on him and just trying to refresh my mind on, you know, what I thought of him at the time, even before the Eagles drafted him, just based on my own evaluation. And I pulled out my sheet on him. And the first two things that I have written down are raw talent and inconsistency, too many drops. You know, and you take those, and that's, and I still believe that. I went back and looked at it again, and that's exactly what he was. He talented, yes, but extremely raw. And desperately needs coaching. And the other part is very, very inconsistent and drops too many balls. So you take those traits and you put them on a guy who's going to have less time to prepare to step up to the NFL. I think it's just unreasonable to think you're going to get big production from him. And I think the Eagles will be, I haven't seen anybody making a really strong case that he's going to come in and be a huge impact guy in his first year. But you probably shouldn't put that kind of pressure on him, because I just don't know. Look, even if he had had a normal spring and a normal summer, even if this had been a normal year and he had all the camps, the OTAs, the minis, the passing camps, and then training camp, even if he had had all of that, I still don't know how ready he would have been in September to play NFL football, because there's just too many inconsistencies in his game. But you bring him in at this late date and you put him basically in a walkthrough training camp, and then comes September the 13th, you're supposed to put him out there and the lights come on and he's going to be an NFL player? I don't see it. I mean, in the offense, I just don't see how much he's going to be able to contribute. As a kick returner, maybe. As a kick returner, maybe. But as far as making him a fully functioning part of the offense, this has been a huge setback for him. I feel bad for him because he seems like a good kid, and I think his heart's in the right place. I think he wants to come in and play. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think the situation is right for him to make that kind of contribution.
Totally agree. Hey, so we heard once upon a time this offseason that the Eagles offered Devontae Freeman a contract. He wants more money. It was rumored to be between us and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for his services. Now the Bucs got shady. Is it reasonable to expect that, you know, if we wait this out long enough, we could have Devontae? And do you want Devontae? Does he fit what we want a back to do here?
I think offensively, just from a fit standpoint, yeah, I think he does. You know, I think he has the kind of skills that would work well in this offense. It doesn't seem as though, now maybe the Eagles are just sort of playing it close to the vets, but it doesn't seem as though they're itching to make a move there. You know, I mean, they talk about Miles Sanders as a guy, and Deuce just said it last week, that I don't see him as a guy that we really have to limit, that we have to put him on a pitch count, that we have to worry about his touches. You know, he's a young guy. He's got tremendous talent. He's in great shape. I think it sounds like they're ready to just cut him loose and just let him go and move a little bit away from the back by committee thing into a full-fledged, he's our number one guy, and okay, the other guys will work around it, but I think they're, it seems to me like they're talking about really giving him the ball and letting him go with it. Would I be interested in Freeman? Yeah, I would. More than I would have been in Shady, to be honest with you. But I don't get the feeling that they're moving in that direction or even looking in that direction.
Ray, speaking of looking, it would seem to me logical that the Eagles should want to sign Josh McCown. Coronavirus factor, quarterback room, the whole deal. Yet they haven't. We've heard nothing about anything from Eagles or McCown. Does it lead you to believe McCown just doesn't want to play?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, doesn't it seem so logical that in a year when you know you could have two or three quarterbacks wiped out in a week, that you would want to have like five or six, especially someone who really knows the system?
Yeah, I don't know what Josh's mindset is right now. I mean, he might really at this point be ready to step in and do the TV thing and just not even think about playing again. I don't know. But it could very well be that there may have been conversations behind the scenes between him and Howie, maybe him and Jeff, him and Doug, I don't know. That's sort of like, listen, we don't know how this year is going to turn out. A lot of crazy things could happen. if we get in a situation where, you know, we lose a quarterback or a quarterback gets infected and all of a sudden we need you, can we call you? To which Josh could either say yes or no. And they may have come up with an understanding where he may have said to them, you know what, in that situation, yeah, okay, if I'm not, you know, if I'm not locked into a you know, a full-time gig on ESPN or something, if I'm just doing a little part-time here and a part-time there, and if you need me, yeah, give me a call. That could be, and it wouldn't be the worst thing, to be honest with you. I really I was very impressed with the guy last year, with the way that there are just certain things you see about certain people. And again, John would knows what I'm talking about here. There are certain guys that when they come into a locker room or they come into a meeting room, players just gravitate towards them. They just they have a certain assurance about themselves. They've been around. They know the ropes. They're good guys. They're good people. They're team guys, and that and you see that right away. And they fit in. And McCown, more than a lot of veterans I've seen, fully understands who he is and what he was at that point. And so he became, I mean, he became the other coach in the room with the quarterbacks, and they loved the guy. And when the opportunity came and when the, you know, a situation presented itself that he had to play, he actually played pretty well. But his greatest contribution was the contribution off the field, the contribution in the quarterback room, and the things that he was able to impart to Wentz. So they had a great relationship. Would that be something you'd want to go back to? Right now you've got three quarterbacks. And the whole key is going to be delivering and developing Hurts. But I could see if something happened to one of those three quarterbacks that, yeah, I could definitely see a phone call being made and Josh possibly being receptive to it. I'd certainly think that's something that I would at least have on the back burner.
Yeah. Ray Dittinger with us. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia. Joe DeCamer, John Ritchie from the Tasty Cake Studio. All right, Ray, let's flip it quickly here to get a Flyer and Sixer question here into you on both. Flyer and Sixers. You have seen Carter Hart, town's buzzing, Flyers loving it. You have seen Bernie Parent, you've seen Pelly Lindbergh, you've seen Ron Hextall when he was great and Ron Hextall when he was not so good, and everyone else in between and after. How does Carter Hart rate, in your opinion, you know, with what we've seen in his young, really so far outstanding career?
Well, that's the thing, is how young he is, and how early in his career he is. It's, you know, Bernie was a different case. You know, Bernie was not Bernie in his first go around with the Flyers. Yep. And then he went away to Toronto and he got to work under Jacques Plante. And then when he came back, he was an older, more mature player. And that's when he became the great goalie. I mean, he was good, but it was after he got the chance to work with Plante and he came back, sort of Bernie 2.0 was the great Bernie. And that's the one that everybody remembers. I think Hart's situation is more analogous to Lindbergh's, in the sense that, that he came in so young and was so good so early. That's the thing. And their situations are not that different in the sense that even though Lindbergh was very young, he had played a lot of big-time hockey. You know, I mean, he was the goaltender for the Swedish national team. He was the goaltender for Sweden in the 1980 games at Lake Placid.
Yep.
You know, and almost beat the U.S. team in the first game. I mean, he was an internationally known star goaltender at a very young age, as was Hart. I mean, Hart was playing and winning those kinds of games himself for Team Canada. So the idea of playing that level of hockey, playing under that kind of pressure, excelling under that kind of pressure, was similar with Lindbergh and it is to Hart. And I thought that, you know, I saw Mike Sielski's story today, or I guess it was Sam Cricchetti's story today, where he talked to Bernie about Carter Hart, and it's Bernie told Sam exactly what he had told me months ago when I was out with him, and I asked him about Hart, and he said the greatest thing about this kid is not just the physical talent, I mean the quickness and the glove and all that kind of stuff, but it's his ability to see the ice and never be out of position. And always anticipate where the puck is going to be. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you can't really coach. It's largely instinct. And some guys have it and some guys don't. And Lord knows the Flyers have had a lot of goalies that don't have it. But this kid had it the minute he walked in the door. And you can see that. And as he gets more mature and he gets more experience, I think he's only going to get better. I am very excited about him. If he stays healthy, I think you can definitely say he's a guy that's going to bring you a cup someday.
Yeah. All right. And final thing, let's get to Ben Simmons, Ray. And we appreciate the extended time here with Ray on the phone. Ray, Ben Simmons, I mean, I'd made the point yesterday He might be the first athlete in the history of Philadelphia sports in my lifetime that I don't know if I can take it anymore, the waiting. I mean, I know there's a chance he's a top five player in the league 4 years from now. I don't know if I want to put myself through 1,000 days of waiting. It gets to me too much. It aggravates me too much. What would you do if you were Brett Brown this week with Ben Simmons? We had a caller yesterday that said there are 6 games left before the Sixers play the playoffs. You tell Ben Simmons before the 6th one, Ben, if you don't shoot threes this game, you will not play in the 5th to last game before the playoffs. And it is a final attempt by Brett Brown to prod him that way. What would you do if you were Brett Brown?
Well, I don't know if you can all of a sudden you and me and John and the callers, I mean, we can all talk till we're blue in the face about what he should do, but I think we all know at this point he's not going to change anything. I mean, he's coached the guy one way from the time he got here.
He's also about to get fired.
Yes, he is.
He really, really is. I mean, he's really about to get fired as soon as they're eliminated, unless they go far enough that Ben Simmons takes them far enough.
Right.
But that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. He's not going to change. He's not going to change his approach with this guy. And you're right. And you know, Brett Brown's going to get fired. And the great irony of it is that Ben Simmons is the guy that's probably going to get him fired.
Yep.
You know
exactly.
And that was one of the things that back when you know he got drafted, everybody was saying, "Oh, this is great. You know, he knows the family. He coached the father. They got the whole Australian thing going. It's going to be great. It's going to turn out to be." And instead of being the foundation of something really good, it's going to be the thing that gets Brett Brown kicked out the door.
The catalyst of destruction.
Incredible.
I'm so anxious. I wish I could be a fly on the wall of their relationship from here forward.
Well, he's going to coach him with the Australian team, right?
He is.
Oh, sure.
He's the Australian coach. What is Brett's relationship to Ben Simmons going to be after Ben gets him fired here in Philadelphia and Brett still has to coach him for Australia?
I honestly don't even care. I mean, I know your point, John.
It's unbelievable.
It's going to cost him his job in Philadelphia. Ray, it's been wonderful catching up on all these subjects. It's fun. I mean, it's a little aggravating with the Phillies and the Sixers right now, but we look forward to hopefully things popping up in a better way, and the Flyers are making the city proud right now. Ray, thanks as always for joining us on the program.
Always a pleasure. Take care, guys.
All right, there he is, Ray Dittinger, the great Ray Diddy on the Schwartz-Colleton guest line. We covered a lot of ground there. You can react to any of it at 215-592-9494. Also, time's yours at 1:45. And back with all the phone calls next, Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on WIP.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.